KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW in Santa Monica, this is The Treatment.
Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You can also hear the show at KCRW.com. It's nice to be a debutante screenwriter whose first produced screenplay has basically done so much and such a great movie. That film, of course, is Rachel Getting Married. Its author, Jenny Lamed, is sitting across from me. Thanks so much for doing this.
I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you.
You talked before about you being a teacher when we got started. And one of the things that is so fascinating to me about this is the group dynamics of that, of the film itself. And every time your protagonist goes into another group, she becomes a different person. I mean, she's trying to feel herself out and yet still have people pay attention to her.
That's interesting. And so when she goes from group to group, like when she goes from a family situation to maybe a meeting, I think she's probably at her best self when she's in the when with the recovery people. And I think that the character of Kim is at her best when nobody's pulling at her. And in meetings, nobody's pulling at her. Nobody wants her to be finished, safe. She can sort of be an unknown. She can be the X factor in those meetings and still be okay. But the X factor at home, I think, is too sort of dangerous for the rest of her family. I think.
Sure. We should say the movie's about a recovering drug sufferer who's returning home for her sister's wedding, the character Kim, played by Anne Hathaway. But I also like that there's so many different families in the house and that weddings bring so many different families together.
Yeah. You know, it's so funny to me that weddings are considered like the chick universe. Because people say, what's this movie about? I say, well, there's this wedding. And they're like, okay, I got you. But it's not, right? It's not like that. When you marry somebody, you're essentially saying, all right, this is the person who's going to see me off the planet. And it's very nice that there are dresses and wine glasses for the red wine and the white wine and little mints and stuff. But it's supposed to be the person that's going to see you off the planet. I think that's pretty heavy. And people go nuts at weddings, don't you think?
Oh, completely.
Completely. Haven't you been to them when there's like the crying girl who's crying for like why she's been crying for 3 days? Why is she doing that? And people, there's like crazy sex at weddings. People go nuts. I thought that to make it as sort of sensual and alive, I think raises the stakes than to have it be one of those perfect red wine glass, white wine glass weddings. Because you could see what she has the chance of screwing up. The character Kim is sober now. But you usually, and we have no idea if she's...
It's a pretty tenuous hold on sobriety.
Yeah. I have no idea if she's going to stay sober or not.
I wondered that if you asked yourself that question as you were writing it.
I got no idea. I got Annie might know, but I have absolutely no idea if she might be... She might do a couple of months and then, you know, it might go straight into hell again. I think that she's going to be... I don't think that Kim's going to be safe for a long time. But... I think that whatever the stuff was that drove Kim in this direction, it started when she was probably 12 or 13 years old. And you tend to return to the age that you were before you started all these shenanigans, I think.
But I also think the wedding is really because of all those free-flowing emotions that you're talking about.
Yeah.
In terms of being a dramatist, it's great for you because the worst possible place to put somebody who's in recovery.
Oh, yeah. We're obviously centuries and millennia away from some Greek theater with people eating each other's kids and I can't bury my brother and, you know, my mom is my lover and, oh, I'm going to stab myself and throw myself off the cliff. Okay, so what do we have? Where are our stakes? And we have life or death, okay? Death of a little boy. What are our holy days, you know? And a wedding is one of our holy days, I think, as funerals are. And people want it to be okay then more than any other time.
And there's a sense of wanting those holy days, both weddings and funerals, to heal. And they almost never do.
Never! Never. They never heal. They just make people crazy nuts. Look, I love a good wedding. I will drink at a wedding.
See, I think weddings is being spectator sport.
That's a good one.
I've always thought of them as being. And I can never stay at a wedding too long for that reason because there's so much Sturm und Drang.
Yeah.
It's it's slightly terrifying to me.
Yeah. What is the worst behavior you've ever witnessed at a wedding?
I've been at weddings not unlike the one in the movie where somebody, and this is the great thing about the film to me, when she makes that speech and everybody's decided before she starts to speak they're not going to react to her. So she should get a laugh when she makes a joke.
Yeah, she should.
And nobody laughs at the joke because they've decided. There's always one person who's chosen as being the catalyst for disaster. Mm-hmm. So that's the person you kind of roll your eyes about. And that to me is a great piece of writing. Incredibly well acted and very well directed. And I wonder where that moment came from when she's giving her speech at the rehearsal dinner. Mm-hmm.
I listen really well, I think. I like to think. Although, you know, my husband might say, what are you talking? Absolutely not. And my son would say, Mom, you haven't heard anything I've said. But the character of Kim wants so much. She's like the hungriest person at the wedding, I think. You know, and it's so funny because Anne Hathaway is a ferociously, and all this stuff was new to me. I didn't know that much about her until Jonathan Demme said, I saw this teenager who was just as good as Julie Andrews in Princess Diaries. And then he said, but I do remember in Brokeback Mountain, she played this character that aged from 17 to 45, and she was 19 years old when she did that. And that's pretty bad. I mean, there aren't a lot of actresses who could do that, and she did that. And she's got these very, very big eyes and this huge mouth. I know it sounds strange, but she's hungry as a person. She's hungry for stuff. She wants knowledge. She wants information. She wants to, like, taste life. And within the form of giving a toast at your sister's wedding, which you kind of have to do, this poor girl who has no filters in the first place, or maybe one that works, like, you know, every other month, has to control her wants, and it's almost an impossible task. I personally want to make contact with people. I mean, I'm sure a lot of writers say, I write what I write and that's it, and people get it or they don't. I want to make contact desperately. I think it's why we're here on this planet. And I've wanted that much. I don't think I've ever screwed it up as bad as that, hopefully. Or maybe I will sometime in the future. But as of yet, it hasn't been that bad. But I've wanted that much, and that's probably where that came from.
It's the truth. My guess is screenwriter Jenny Lamette, her screenplay, Rachel Getting Married, is on the basis of Jonathan Demme's film. This character, in these all these worlds she inhabits, is as naked in all of them, but the one place that she needs forgiveness is the most is the one place she can't get it.
Yeah.
Which is in her own house.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I wonder, because obviously you've given this a lot of thought in terms of the thematic kind of location of it. And I wonder when that occurred to you, that it was about somebody who needs to be forgiven and when she comes home again can't get it.
Can't get it.
I mean, that's almost Eugene O'Neill.
God, they're that miserable. Well, first of all, I thank
you. You know what I mean.
Yeah,
right?
No, I do.
And your dad directed Eugene O'Neill's as well.
Yes, he did.
Well, yes.
And that was a wonderful movie. That scene with Katharine Hepburn and remember the noise that her dress makes.
We're talking about Sitting Lament, Long Day's Journey into Night. But yeah, but it's
a little yeah.
But you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. This,
that's when she goes to the house. I'm not trying to give too much away because I want people to see the film. But in each of those situations where she exposes some part of herself. It feels very much to me like almost post-O'Neill. I wonder if in some way you felt that in the writing of it.
I felt genuinely like Kim wants, and this could be forgiveness, or it could be another way of saying it, forgiveness, but she wants everybody to tell the truth. And she's not calm. She's not easy about it. It's not a palatable truth anyway. She wants to get a sock on the jaw. I think she wants a little punishment.
Well, that's true because she feels like she really hasn't. She's punished herself, but she hasn't been punished by everybody else.
She hasn't been punished by everybody else. I mean, there's someone who somebody said to me, "Oh, she hasn't even hit bottom yet. She hasn't even hit bottom in terms of like being an addict." She hasn't. Maybe she took. I knew that she wanted to get through this weekend, but she could have chosen. Why did she choose to come home? And I've thought about that a lot. I think she comes home to set something straight for herself. I think she needs to hear her family say what they're going to say to her, however hurtful it might be, so then she can go on and leave the house again and do what she needs to do outside the house. I think that there hasn't been the... We have so many words now that, I think, as we say in my house, are full of the caca. Words like closure, you know, and healing. All right, closure and healing, good. If it were my child who died, I don't know if I could ever have... I don't even know what that means. I don't know how you even bring that into the same sort of butterfly net with the closure and the healing. I mean, it's nice to have a lot of vocabulary, but I think that it tends to sort of... suck some of the life out of stuff a little bit. So you could say Kim's coming home for closure so she could move on. I don't think so. I think she's coming home to take a punch. And then she's going to go. And she's probably going to come back again in a little bit and take some more punches. And then she's going to go again.
As we talk about this, again, it sounds like you're describing to me a Eugene O'Neill play.
Really?
Where somebody comes home. Mm-hmm. I mean, so much of O'Neill is coming back into the house.
Yeah, God. And you're like, please don't go into the house. Please don't go into the house. Go to a hotel.
Exactly.
Go to the neighbors. Just don't come home. Yeah.
And by forgiveness, I mean, she really needs to forgive herself.
Yeah.
But she's never really been called out in the house for this thing.
She hasn't.
And all those things you're talking about, which imply healing, like a wedding implies healing.
Yeah.
But it's a false promise of that.
Yeah.
You know, it's people not dealing with these things.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think probably the bravest character beside the character of Kim is the character of Abby, the mother. She can't be on screen very long because she's got too much stuff going on.
But she comes in like a thunderclap when she's there.
Oh, man. I mean, well, you know, it's Deborah freaking Winger who's, you know, Ms. Winger, if you're listening, please work more and choose to do more stuff.
Well, and the parts come around, I'm sure she'll do it. This is a great piece of material for her.
I hope. I can only hope. I know that she lives in the same neighborhood as Jonathan Demme, and he corralled her and, you know, begged and pleaded. And the character of Abby can't be on screen too long because she's too sort of volcanic and weird. And look what happens when they're left alone together for 5 minutes, her and her daughter.
Except Abby does give Kim the punch.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that's kind of what the honest reaction is.
It's the treatment, I guess, as writer Jenny Lambette, her first film as screenwriter, is Rachel Getting Married, which is only coincidentally about Rachel. And I wonder how long it took you to sort of create.
The script itself gestated without me writing a word for a very long time. And I wrote it quite quickly. I probably wrote the whole thing in 7 weeks. But I thought it was cooking.
How long a gestation period?
A couple of months, probably 6 months, 7 months. Of not writing a word. And also being a little afraid.
And
why? Process is process. Stuff occurs to you. You have a germ of something. And this seemed really honest, this germ. And I'm not that particularly brave person. I don't like bugs. I don't like, you know, I didn't think that I was going to be able to stick it out and be as honest as I wanted to be. So I was afraid to start. And then I figured, in the words of Sidney Lumet, my very own pop, oh, God, just freaking start. He doesn't say freaking. He says other stuff. He's terribly profane.
Just, we've all seen Serpico. We have a very good idea.
Right, exactly. But it's just from a start. Oh, for God's sakes, just start.
And he also works very fast, too.
Yeah, so. He works like crazy fast. So maybe I absorbed. I am a fast worker.
Okay.
And maybe I absorbed some of that.
We should take a break. We have so much more to talk about. We have my guest, Jenny Lumet. Her first produced film is the amazing Rachel Getting Married, directed by Jonathan Demme. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment. There's more to come.
You're listening to The Treatment with Elvis Mitchell from the studios of KCRW Santa Monica.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at kcrw.com. My guest is Jenny Lumet. Her screenplay of Rachel Getting Married has been turned into a film by Jonathan Demme. We were talking about family before the break. And as a writer, I guess I've got to ask what kind of work you do, because you believe the kind of tensions in that household are kind of long won. You know, that as soon as we see these people together, we get an understanding of how they've kind of made each other into what they are. Those could be archetypal characters, but they're not.
I listen to people. I'm a school teacher, and I teach the 7th and 8th grade, and I'm the drama lady. And I find that people say that age is such a pain in the butt, and I find that age incredibly vital and weird because they swing. They know absolutely everything they think, and then they know nothing, and they're so vulnerable and naked, and they're completely covered up. And they always, whatever they say, they're right for them in that moment. And I listen.
And they don't know who they are when they're alone.
Absolutely no idea. Absolutely no idea. Don't know what to do themselves. Don't. They're never alone. They're on the. They're with the Facebook and they're with their. You know, they're always in community. But that's absolutely right. I'm going to steal that.
Go.
It's, you know, it makes sense that you just said that, because I don't think any of, I can't imagine any of these people. I can't imagine Rate, the character of Rachel, or Kim. Certainly not the character of Paul. Alone for a second, I think they would go completely bananas.
I should say before we go to any further, is that this is the kind of film that Demme hasn't made for a long time.
Yeah, he made big movies for a while.
Yeah, but
big
had,
in scope.
But
I,
this takes me back to some of my favorite stuff, like Citizens Band and Melvin and Howard. Mm-hmm. Those films that were about a kind of intimacy, but also very much about families in transition.
Yes. Yes, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I'm obviously a huge Demme fan. And in my house, having had nothing produced on my ancient Mac with my son watching SpongeBob and my dog and my this and my that, I'm thinking, oh, yeah, Jonathan Demme. Jonathan Demme, that's it. It's the only person on the entire planet who
really?
Could direct it. Absolutely. Absolutely. It was the hubris. Beyond hubris, thinking, yeah, this is perfect for him. He'll love it, you know. And then I had to go heat up some nuggets or whatever it I had to do for my son. So, yeah, because of those movies and because of Something Wild, he seems to love transition. He seems to really fall in love with people who are sort of crossing a scary bridge. And all these characters in Rachel Getting Married are on the scary bridge, and they're also impossible. I don't know if you'd want to hang out with any of these people. And I knew that he would love them because he has. I mean, even if you look at Silence of the Lambs, the way he treated the serial killer and the way he treated Dr. Lecter, those aren't particularly sympathetic characters. But he obviously had some kind of weird understanding for them.
For me, those films that really had the biggest impact.
Yeah.
The ones about family.
Yeah.
And the ones about families trying to figure out what they are. And sometimes happy conclusions, sometimes not. But always kind of with that, well, now what, when the movie ends? Because even the movies end, you know, you're still wondering what's going to happen to these people. How conscious were you of those being antecedents as you were writing?
Huge in the sense that he's willing to live in the unknown. Demme is, and a lot of people aren't. And I get very pissy about movies that wrap everything up in any, because I just, unless it's a movie about gift wrap. I mean, seriously, you can't, families aren't like that. You know, people aren't like that. I've never in my life, 41 years old, I've never heard the big speech. I've never heard the big secret revealed. I've never heard, oh, really? You've always loved me and you just had to do whatever? I understand. That doesn't happen. You're always living in the unknown, I think, in a family. And Married to the Mob, the family of Michelle Pfeiffer, Matthew Modine, the little boy and Sister Carol, you know, that's great. That's beautiful, I think.
That's almost like a family at the wedding.
Yeah, that is like a family at the wedding. That is like a family at that wedding.
It's the treatment. My guess is Jenny Lamet. Her screenplay, Rachel Getting Married, was directed by Jonathan Demme. And I guess as we talk about this, though, one of the things that's a real strength for Demme is the way he treats women. And we've just been getting at that.
Huge.
And maybe one of the first of his generation who weren't treating women like either appendages, but people with their own dramatic, I don't want to say journeys, but their own kind of dramatic trajectories.
Yeah, huge.
And this is a film that's almost solely about that.
Yeah.
And the guys kind of exist to get in the way.
Yeah, they do. I mean, you're absolutely right. Demi's, you know, one can talk about how Demi handles his women, and he doesn't handle, which is why it's so freaking good. He doesn't, you know, they're not unicorns, they're not poodles, they're just these flesh and blood creatures, and he doesn't handle. I mean, if you look at Melanie Griffith in Something Wild, that's my favorite performance of hers. Man, she was, I don't know what I'm allowed to, what am I allowed to say?
Whatever you want to say.
She was a crazy woman, and it was great. It was, I felt I was watching this pulse, this living, breathing human being. And the way he lived with his women. And the producer on this movie, Netta Armian, she's a lot of women. And she kicked this movie into production. He's a lot of his support crew and his tech crew are female. And I wanted to get this movie made. Politics are nice. I wanted to get this movie made, and the fact that it was a proportionate female crew was great. The women on the set, I think, informed this production.
But I can't help going back because I wonder how important theater was for you as a kid coming up, because this piece does have, and you don't notice until after it's over, a three-act structure.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah. I knew that these people were emotionally chaotic, so I knew that there couldn't be it couldn't be a cut and dried screenplay. I knew that they were kind of, there are 8-page dialogue scenes, and you don't often, you know, you don't often see that. And there's a lot of sort of weird stuff format in regards to the format of the script. I love form. I love it. I started writing scripts 13 years ago, and I've probably written 5. And I'm trying to get better and trying to get better with each one. And I work hard at form because I don't think you can mess with it until you really understand it. And it's there for a freaking reason. I mean, if Seneca had it, and if those guys could, you know, have it, I am certainly not going to say, well, you know, I'm an artist and I decide, I will throw this away. This means nothing. It's huge. It's huge.
I just found that it's also like a Demi film that it seems to be anecdotal, but in fact, it does have a structure.
Yes.
And that it does have that spine that you're talking about.
Yes.
And I really could see this as somebody staging this as a play. I mean, because it takes place in so many rooms.
Someone
asked
us.
It's about sort of like the tensions in that room informing what goes on. But I'm sorry, you.
No. Well, someone somebody had asked us, had said, "Oh, we want to put this on. We want to put this on in Greece as a play." I know, and I thought, "Oh, I'll go." I thought it sounded wonderful, and it does take place in so many rooms. You know, I was not on set. I was not.
Why?
You have to ask Jonathan.
Did you want to be?
Yes and no. I wanted to be because, you know, it's a movie and it's cool. And you think the director will be in that, like, flying chair thing. You know, I thought that there'd be people following me around asking me, you know, do I want a Diet Coke or do I want a soy something? And that would be cool. And I would be, like, you know, that ass on set. And I'd be like, yeah, that's why I wanted to be on set.
I'm betting you've been the princess on the set once or twice before in your life.
Yes, have been set princess. Only a couple of times, and you know, and I know that movie sets are boring. I mean, unless you're working, when you're working, they're boring, you know? And unless it's that second where you're capturing this moment, they're just, you know, it's just hang out by craft services and eat the donuts. That's the only, you know, it's the only thing you want to do. So it would have been fun to be set princess. I don't think Demi operates that way, and it was his choice. I also don't think that he has ever had his writers on set.
Oh, is that true?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. I mean, they're, you know, I could be off, but my information is that he doesn't have writers on set, which is fine. The way it was his choice, and I wish I could say I wrote this. I did not say shoot this, write this is to be shot like a documentary. That's all him. And the ambient music, you know, the sound editor, Jim Squires, oh my. I mean, what he went through on this movie was insane. Insane.
I'm just saying how much live music there is in this film, and it's all recorded live.
It's all. There is one scene where Annie goes up the stairs. She's just returned home. She goes up the stairs and she looks at her little brother's bedroom for like two beats. And Jonathan said, "Why did you stay there that long?" And she goes, "Well, didn't you hear the guy playing the freaking Erd or the didgeridoo on the stairs, which is what was going on? That informed her. That informed what she chose to do." And another moment, there was a moment that I did not write, but I will take credit for it. When she screams, "Are they going to play all weekend?" They're having a big confrontational scene, and there's guys playing music on the porch. And Annie screamed, "Are they going to play all weekend?" And the father says, "Tell them to knock it off." Annie had said to Jonathan, or sort of sent a message to Jonathan, "I'm having a hard time concentrating on what Rosemary DeWitt, who played the sister, is saying. Can you please ask them to stop?" And Jonathan sent a message back to Annie. "If it's bothering you, you should do something about it." And this is that he created a very safe set. And that's what she did. And I thought it made the scene, it gave it something I wished I'd written it. It gave it a moment of that was right on. That was right on.
It's The Treatment, which you can also hear at KCRW.com. My guest is screenwriter Jenny Lamette. Her first produced screenplay is Rachel Getting Married, directed by Jonathan Demme. For a last question, I've got to ask you, if directing a screenplay is in your future.
It seems like a colossal pain in the butt.
Because it's a lot to give away.
It's a lot to give away. People need a lot of stuff from the director. I mean, if you see directors, they're never alone. They probably have a protected space inside their heads. They would have to. Because every minute someone needs information or needs direction or needs something. And actors are extraordinarily needy, as well they should be, and it's such a difficult job to do it well. I'm not necessarily that person, you know? I don't know. I mean, I like teaching. It's hugely joyful, and there are kids who need me in that situation, but it's a much more controlled. You know, I know it's not going to go on for 12 hours. It's going to be, and then it stops, and then you can go and you can take your break and get yourself back. I don't know.
Well, I'm afraid we're out of time. Thank you so much for doing this, Jenny.
Thank you so much. Let us shake.
Oh, please. If we're shaking on the radio, my guest is Jenny Lamette. It's her screenplay, Rachel Getting Married, that Jonathan Demme directed. Our recording engineer is Paul Ruess at the Argo Network. Bob Carlson is the editor. Gemma Dempsey is the producer. I'm not getting married. I'm Elvis Mitchell. It's The Treatment.
An audio archive of this and other programs can be found at kcrw.com. For questions and comments about The Treatment, please email us at thetreatment@kcrw.com. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.